We are in Ruth 2, and my goal this morning is to draw you back into this book without recapping. And I'm looking at you because I know you don't like recaps. So I've heard the cry loud and clear, let's not recap it. And you know that I would preach the whole book again. So let's not do that. Let's find our way back to where we were in the life of Ruth without recapping too much and jumping on through chapter 2 so that we can get to chapter 3 before I have to go out of town and Justin and James have refused to talk about Ruth going to meet Boaz in the middle of the night. So let me read for us all of chapter 2, and I promise we shan't teach through all of chapter 2. Now, chapter 2, verse 1. Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Please, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "May the Lord be with you." And they said to him, "May the Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" The servant in charge of the reapers replied, "She is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab. And she said, 'Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.' Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. And she has been sitting in the house for a while." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw." And she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work, and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me, and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I'm not like one of your maidservants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here that you may eat of the bread." And this is where we're starting this morning, by the way. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar." So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. When she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servant, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. Also you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it, that she may glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. Her mother-in-law then said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead." Again, Naomi said to her, "The man is our relative. He is of our closest relatives." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "Furthermore, he said to me, 'You should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids so that others do not fall upon you in another field." So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for your word. I thank you for your character as we see it lived out, embodied in the lives and the characters of your people. Lord, may we look to you for favor and we find your strength and your joy, even as we see Ruth does here. Pray this in your son's name. Amen. All right, very quickly. How did we get in this place? Just one or two very quick things. Tell me a little bit about where Naomi is at the beginning of this chapter. What's Naomi up to when we start this? What's her life like? Bitter. Okay? I said she was sitting in her house kind of, okay, I'm sorry, I have to do it. You know I have to do it. She looks like the Bernie meme in her house, right? She's sitting there like, okay? She's bitter. Justin, James is like, what are you talking about? Don't worry, we'll catch you up. Okay. She's bitter. What's Ruth like in this circumstance? Industrious. She's got a plan, right? Now, it occurred to me that this situation that they found themselves in, chapter 2 is like when you go, and Jen likes me to do this with my socks and I always forget, right? When you go to clean or your nice sweaters or something, and you go turn it inside out, right? Something about that action really satisfies me of like pulling a shirt inside out. I think it's because I used to have a reversible jacket as a kid, which I thought was really cool. And you're like, this is the reversible jacket of chapter 1, right? Because we're really in the same place. In fact, we're in a worse place than Naomi feared at the beginning of chapter 1. In chapter 1, they're out of the land because they're worried about the famine that's coming. Now, Ruth and Naomi are back in Bethlehem, but they have no heavy labor, right? There's no one to provide. The Lord may have blessed the land again, but their part in it is very uncertain. They're back where they started, but everything's worse. There's no food on the table. Everything that Naomi fears really has come to pass at this point. She's without a husband. She's without a future in terms of sons. She's got her Moabites, her alien outcast daughter-in-law, who evidently she's not all that, you know, it's like, great, you're here, but she didn't even mention her when she comes back. She's like, I came back alone. You know, so she's sitting there, and life is hard at this point. It is the exact reversible sweater, polar opposite of her hopes and dreams in chapter 1. Everything that she has feared has come to pass. In fact, I was thinking about this prayer that she offers for her daughters-in-law before they hit the road back to Judah, and she says to them, may the Lord grant you to find rest in the house of your husband, right? I think that's kind of Naomi's goal in life. Like if you were to ask her, what is the good life? What does happiness look like for you? What is it that you long for and what is it that you fear might be taken away? She wants to have rest, security, support, a future. And she has none of those things. And so she's sitting in her house doing the Bernie with her mittens, wondering, immersed in her bitterness. And Ruth says, I have this great plan. Now think about this. Naomi is the plan lady. Naomi is the schemer. We'll see that all the way through. Naomi's coming up with her stuff. Now we're educating James here on what, there we go. So now he understands. Okay, cool. You're tracking. Okay. Now notice the contrast in this plan. Instead of saying, I'm out of the land, as we said, I'm out of God's place, I'm out of God's plan for his people, Ruth says, I'm going to do this bold, courageous, dangerous, hard thing. So we said, there's so many options that you could pursue to feed you, to feed your family, right? There's so many things you could do. Many of them may be borderline morality, but there's all these things that you could do in this circumstance to take care of your mother-in-law that would be easier. And she says, I'm going to be faithful. I'm going to do this dangerous, difficult thing. I am going to go and I'm going to glean in somebody's field. Why? Because this is the provision that God's made for his people. Isn't this an amazing contrast? Instead of staying in the land, she's come back to this land and she says, I'm going to do the difficult, dangerous thing. I will provide for you in a faithful way. I just think that's remarkable. Now, the theme of this chapter all the way through, and I'll show it to you, and you'll be like, oh, duh, it's right there. The theme of this chapter is grace, or favor, depending on how you translate it. Grace is the proper, I think, the better way to translate it. But it's the Hebrew word hen, which is grace, favor, acceptance. It's kind of this picture of God's grace. And you see that because the first key ingredient to Ruth's plan is that she needs to find favor, right? She says, let me go, verse 2, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose eyes I find this grace, this favor, right? Why is that a problem? Because people don't like you to show up at their factory or their workplace or their bank and start helping yourself to what's later on, right? And remember, this is not the idealized Israel. This is the Israel in which every man does what's right in his own eyes. There's no king in the land. Everyone does what's right in his own eyes. Now, we know, we have this secret. We know that there's this dude named Boaz, and we know he is an Eset Hael. He's a great man. He's a man of something, right? He's a big man. But we don't know what sort of big man, because is he a man with lots of influence and power? Maybe. We'll see that he is, right? Is he a man of great deeds and great valor? Well, maybe. It says he's very rich, so he's done something with his life, right? Is he a man of great righteousness, of personal worth? Well, we don't really know that yet. What sort of great man has the narrator tantalizingly laid out there for us to know about that Ruth, by the way, has no clue about? We'll see that as we go. So she needs to find favor. And you'll notice when we get down here to verse 10, the result of her first conversation with Boaz is, why have I found favor? She's amazed. Why have I found this grace in your sight? We'll talk about this as we go. Verses 11 and 12 are kind of the high point, in my view, of the whole book, but particularly of this chapter. They're the turning point of this chapter, and conveniently, that's kind of where we stopped last time. And then again, in verse 13, after he explains it, she asks, why have I found favor? And then she says, I have found favor. I have found this grace in your sight. Even though I'm a foreigner, I'm unlike even the social status of your workers, the most unlikely person to find this grace, and I've found it in you. And then when she comes home, what does Naomi say? Verse 19, may he who took notice of you, may he who gave you this grace that you knew was the key to your plan, may he be blessed. So grace is the heart of this chapter. It's the theme of this chapter. In fact, if I were Chris, I would say what we'll see today, but I'm not Chris, so I don't usually say that, is that grace in this chapter is the embodied character of God. It's the character of God displayed. It's the character of God that draws near to his people. Grace draws near to the people of God to enliven, encourage, and enable, enliven and encourage and enable them to accomplish his purposes, and it does so with overflowing abundance. Grace doesn't just meet it, it does it with overflowing, overwhelming abundance. Now, I know that's grace localized in this chapter. I'm not writing a systematic theology. I'm discussing grace as the character of God as it is displayed here in this chapter. Now, why? Just briefly, tell me again, why is Ruth's plan, we hinted at some of it, why is Ruth's plan such a bold one?
It's risky.
It's risky. Why is it risky?
It's set in the period of the judges.
Okay.
Everyone did what was right.
Well, everybody does what's right. And particularly, what else is risky about it? Not just the time frame, the chronological time frame of this occurring. What else is risky about it? Absolutely. She needs somebody that she can find favor in. That's maybe, maybe not. Okay. What else is risky?
Doesn't have a lot of
protection. Yeah, she's a woman. She's a foreign woman in a land that can't stand. I know the ISIS comparisons, I think, are overdone, but okay. She's a woman from a bad place. And the women from that place have a bad history of ruining Israel's life, right? And the really valiant dude that we know from the book of Numbers makes his name by pinning a woman from her country to the bottom of a tent with a spear. Okay, so, you know, not a great history between the two offshoots of the family. Okay, but she's a woman. Get rid of all the rest of it. She's a woman in a lawless land. We've seen what happens to women in this country, right? It's not a good thing. Have you noticed in this chapter how many times somebody says that I have commanded them not to touch you, I've commanded them not to harass you, it's good that you went to his field that you wouldn't be. They're not just dreaming this stuff up, right? It's immediately on the first instance of everybody's thinking, I was supposed to say something else, but it didn't come out. It's the first thing that they think, like, you're gonna be safe, right? That's not just like chivalry in an age of police everywhere. This is a serious upfront concern. Now, she goes to the field. She starts working. She asks the overseer, and her chance chanced upon this one particular field, Boaz's field. And lo and behold, Boaz comes to the field. He comes and visits his workers, and the first clue we have as to what sort of Eset Hael, what sort of excellent man he is the first words out of his mouth are this, "May the Lord be with you." Right? It's a beautiful clue. And I don't know, did she overhear that? Doesn't really tell us. And then the next thing he does, he notices, that one's different, right? By the way, there's no romance yet. No romance in chapter 2. Sorry, I'm a bleeding romantic, but there's no romance in chapter 2. Naomi might be going there in her head, but nobody else is. Okay. He just notices because he cares. He's concerned about what's happening in his field. Right? It's this amazing thing. He notices even the most unimportant of his laborers. And he goes, "Oh, well." I think his overseer's response is really funny because his overseer's kind of like, he's kind of gone out of a limb and saying, "Yeah, go ahead," because he knows, well, this is who Boaz is, so he's probably going to be okay with this. But now he's on the spot, and he's kind of like, I figured you'd be okay, but yeah, I said. And he's like, okay. So his response is this amazing thing Justin talked about, this amazing response where he goes and says, "Absolutely glean in my field. In fact, don't go to any other field. Glean here," right? Which is amazing because the law, I think in the view of the law, you would kind of rotate your way around, right? For lots of reasons, not just because you don't want to overstay your welcome, but I mean, there's not that much to glean. Right there, the point of this is that they pick it all up. And if it helps you think about it, imagine going, like we've done before, to the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, right? Where they're slicing up the money and the sign says free samples tomorrow, and it's never tomorrow, right? And you know, they're printing off Benjamins and they're picking them all up, okay? When it falls to the floor, they're picking it up. Somebody's picking it up, even if it ends up in their pocket, but somebody's picking it up. There's not a lot of nickels laying around on the floor in the mint, okay? So this is raw money. Food back then is just raw money. There is no like, "Hey, let's go buy this." This is economy. And nobody's missing it. So she'd probably have to rotate through the fields a little bit to make it. And he says, "No, you stay here and help yourself to my stuff all the time," which is just the beginning of his grace. And he even goes further. He just establishes the basic necessities. "Yeah, rest here. Have some water. I made sure you're going to be safe," right? And her response to this is, "Wow, I found grace." So this whole first half of the chapter, up to verse 12 or so, you could say is finding grace, searching for grace, right? She knows she needs this favor, and now she's encountered it, and she's amazed, right? Isn't this beautiful? Her humility and her boldness together, she's like, "I'm going to go work hard. I'm going to go be faithful, and I hope the Lord will bless that." And then when she meets, when this happens, she's amazed. She's just like, "Wow, this is great. I can work hard all day long here." Why? Why would you go to such great measures? And he says, "Everything that you've done has been told to me." And this beautiful line, "May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the God of Israel." You know what's beautiful about that? How many people that do charity are like, "I do the charity," right? But in Boaz's view, he's just running his farm. Right? He's like, "May your wages, may you go home with a gift from the Lord." Right? His view of grace, his view of his work, his view of all that the Lord has given him is precisely, "It's the Lord who's given me this. I'm just the guy who manages and runs this. He's given her this stuff. He just said, you can glean here. May your reward be great from the Lord." It's the heart that he has behind it. "I'm just here to run in my lane and please my Lord." I think it's amazing. We'll see that as it unfolds. Just teasing that out there for you. So, she's searching for grace. Now, that's a pretty good start. You go out in the morning, bold, a little scared. The guy says, "You can glean here, at least for today," right? But it seems like he's got a little longer view in mind so far. "You can glean here. You're going to be safe. Going to be accepted. You're not going to get run off. Hey, dinner's on the table for tonight," right? That's not really sure. In fact, it seems like she didn't even bring a sack lunch with her. Well, maybe I could be wrong, but it seems like she didn't even maybe bring a meal. So times are tough. And today we have dinner on the table. And she says, and her heart, her countenance is, "God has provided." If we stopped right there, her heart is, "God's grace is amazing. I can't believe that you have provided this for me." Now, the fruits of grace. The search for grace, now the fruits of grace. That's not a great term. If you come up with a better one, let me know, and we'll run with that instead. At mealtime, or at the time to eat, Boaz says to her, now this, guys, hold on to your hats. The time to eat, she's probably, have you ever been somewhere, I do this all the time, but have you ever been somewhere you feel really awkward? Like, you know you probably shouldn't be there? Okay, good, because I'm not the only one. Yeah. So what do? You kind of slide off, right? So she's a gracious woman. She's like, okay, I know I'm like here, but I'm not really here. And they're going to sit down and have a meal. Now, this is a big deal. Again, remember, the food is the economy. And meals are what you do. You don't go to the movies. You don't, you know, this is the corporate benefits. Like, most of you have jobs that come with benefits, right? Like, I get to fly on our airplanes when they're empty, which is really cool, and they're never empty, but except right now because you can't go anywhere. But your jobs come with benefits, right? Well, Boaz is this amazing employer, and that he provides, out of this stuff he's getting, he provides, evidently, at least on occasion, a meal for his people. Maybe it's a special day, maybe he does this regularly. Seems like it's kind of a special occasion, and this is the benefit. And of course, she doesn't work there, right? She's just there picking up the scraps. And Boaz has said these things, right? He said, you're going to be welcome here. You're going to be safe here. I've told my people not to touch you, to mess with you. But he embodies this grace, right? He doesn't just say, okay, I got it all structured for you. Grace draws near, right? He says to her, come here, sit down at this meal. Take your bread. By the way, as far as I can tell, it's the first mention of pita in the Bible, which I think is important. And I'm going to go with this hummus that she dips it in as hummus because I like hummus. It's probably like soured wine that they used, but I like hummus better. So he says, here, come on, partake of this bread, right? And dip it in the sauce that I've made from my wine. Like, don't eat whatever is in your sack lunch. This is a good meal, by the way. I know you're like, pita and hummus? Yeah, this is a pretty, he's rolled out, and it's not, he didn't order pizza, he rolled out the steak, okay? This is a pretty good meal for a working day. Partake in this. Okay, guys, I don't know how to express that to you other than imagine you showed up at a workplace that you wanted to maybe get a job at or something, and you were just hoping, a lot of you work at Chick-fil-A, right? And you let, as far as I've been able to observe, Chick-fil-A, when you come in, if you don't have any money, they'll give you a meal, right? Is that generally true? I've noticed people come in and I notice them giving away. So imagine you show up for that and the guy who does benefits walks up to you and says, hey, I'm going to put you on our health insurance. Right? As far as I can tell, that's the most valuable benefit you can get from an employer these days because it's expensive, right? So and all of you are like, I want a job that eventually will do my insurance. So she's sitting there and he's like, here, sign up for the health benefits. What? I'm going to invite her in to do this? And then he personally takes the roasted grain and he starts serving her, right? It's just this beautiful picture of drawing near to her need, of not saying, he could set this up and still be like, oh, Moabite woman, you know, I was good. I fulfilled the law, but, you know, and she ate in my field and wasn't I a great guy? No, he draws her in. He's told people, don't mess with her, be generous. But now what do they see the boss doing? See the boss himself handing her food. This is extraordinary. This is the sort of thing, fast forward, I know it's a little bit different cultural times and everything else, but what's the thing that just drives the Pharisees nuts? You ate with them? Right? You ate with a Moabite? It's like, he draws her in. He says, it's not enough for me to establish this for you. I'm going to demonstrate God's grace towards you. Come and have a meal. I keep flipping my page by my motions. Now, Jen and I were in Kansas City a couple months ago, and we went out to dinner with some friends. And we went to Maggiano's, was it? Which I've never been to before. I can't really recall, at least. It's this Italian place. And I'm Italian, so I hate going to Italian places. They always disappoint me. But we go to this Italian place, and we accidentally ordered this meal that came with, I kid you not, another meal to take home. Now, I read that, and I just thought this was marketing hyperbole about, like, we're going to give you so much food you can't, which they do, and I really hate that. They give you, like, this plate this big. I don't know. I can't do that. But so we finish. We don't even get halfway through our meal. And they're like, and what meal would you like to take home? And they hand us another menu. I'm like, what? They're like, it's included. So they park us another meal. Guys, she's having the Maggiano's experience. Because he doesn't just hand her some grain, he keeps, foom, foom. And it kind of, the text kind of implies like she's really hungry and she's like, okay, right? And not in a not graceful way, but she's partaking and he satisfies her and he keeps it coming and he keeps it coming and we'll see in a bit, she's going to take some home, right? She's got the Maggiano's meal to take home with her, right? This is extraordinary. He's demonstrating, he's coming near to her need. And again, in his mind, he loves to do this because he loves his God and he knows the heart of his God. Listen to what it says in Deuteronomy 14. Now, this is talking about the Jubilee year, but the idea, I think, here is the same. The Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance among you. And the alien, check. The orphan, probably not. The widow, double check. Who are in your town, shall come and eat and be satisfied in order that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do. All right? Guys, I just have to say, this is a man who knows his Bible. He knows his Lord. And by the way, this is the problem I have with a Christological reading of the Old Testament where everything just is about Christ, and that's the way we flatten out our hermeneutic and understanding. Because if all Boaz was looking here was the gospel and Christ, he wouldn't do this. He'd just be like, oh, that's about Christ when he comes, right? He knows the whole law, and it's so internalized that his heart beats with God's heart for the afflicted. And in his mind, he's saying, may the Lord reward you. I'm just a righteous Israelite in my right place, running in my lane. May the Lord reward you. And oh, by the way, here's this food, right? That's the heart that he has. So she eats, she's satisfied, she goes back to work. We'll talk about that in a minute. Now Boaz says, bring it in. Okay, guys, team meeting. Let her glean even among the sheaves. So gleaning is what happens after they're done doing the stuff. He's like, right while they're picking the stuff up, right? After the men have cut it, you come right in there and don't insult her. There we go to the protection again, right? Because, you got to think, this lady showed up, she's a Moabitess, she's working in your job, and she's getting all the stuff to take home for free. There's probably some potential for being a little bit snide, even though they've just seen the boss's attitude. Now, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it that she may glean. Oops. Right? Like, nobody does this. It certainly, I guarantee you, never happened in Boaz's field before. You think any of these guys that he's worked, that he's managed and worked so well are like, oh, I dropped it. No, I mean, he's whoops. And there goes another one. And there goes another one. And she has no clue. Isn't this beautiful picture? I mean, she's not dumb, but isn't this beautiful picture? He doesn't go and say, I'm going to be gracious to you. He says, may the Lord be gracious to you. He doesn't get in her lane. I love that. This is a man who loves the Lord and who, you know, we hear all this stuff about, well, power is evil and power is bad and power is just an oppression tool. This man loves the Lord and he runs in his lane and he enables her to be a righteous woman. He protects her. He clears her lane. He protects her. He encourages her. He makes it possible for her to do this hard, difficult, faithful task. He doesn't get in the way. So may the Lord reward you. Isn't that amazing? By the way, she's out there working like a dog. That doesn't go away. And you know what? The text says, that's awesome, right? This is the nature of work. The nature of work is it's a good gift from God by which you care for the people that you love, right? And by which you support his people. So he clears the lane for her to be a righteous woman. Girls, you got to know people like this. And when you meet these men, and by the way, he didn't just start doing it today. He's got to have been like this all the way so that this is just a normal, consistent thing that happens when you bump into Boaz, okay? He has cleared the lane for her to run and be a righteous woman. Isn't that a beautiful picture of what it means to be a biblical man? And isn't this a beautiful picture of a biblical woman, right? I've said for years, I don't want to write many books. I want to write one book. I want to write a book about complementarity, and I want to write a book about bold, wonderful, godly women, because so often I go to churches and I hear these people talk about complementarity and all they talk about is, well, women can't do this, 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 and this. And I'm like, have you met Abigail? Have you met Ruth? Have you met Esther? Have you met these women that are bold, faithful? They run in the lane that God has provided. Look at what she's done here. She's out working hard. She's risking things. She's completely entrusted herself to God's grace in a faithful, obedient way. Isn't this a picture of 1 Peter 3, since we were just in 1 Peter? A woman who's not frightened by any fear. To be honest, it's very much the opposite picture of Naomi. She's the true Israelite woman here. Naomi is, as women can, because of the love that you are built to love your family and love people, that love can be a fear. And Naomi is consumed by this fear of what will happen to me and my security and everything else. Naomi says, I will be bold and joyful despite those fears because I trust Christ. And they come together, they bump into each other, and they both can run in their lane. No romance yet. We're going to get there. You're probably thinking that because the narrator has set you up to think about it, and I guarantee you Naomi's thinking about it. These are two godly, righteous people who are enabling and encouraging one another to run in the lane that God has given them. That's why I said grace encourages. It enables the people of God to accomplish His purposes with overflowing abundance. So, she gleaned in the field until evening. She works hard all day long. Then she goes and she beats out what she gleaned. You know, you get all the stuff and you got to thresh it out. Evidently, he let her use her threshing floor. She threshes it out because you got to get the actual grain. Nobody eats the stalk or anything. So you got to get the actual product, which, by the way, also is really hard work. So she threshes it out, and it was about an ephah of barley. Guys, 35 to 50 pounds of eatable stuff. Okay, the average worker in the ancient Near East on a not so well run, average, just kind of normal farm was expected to get like 1 or 2 pounds a day. Okay, so at this point, Ruth knows, oh, I didn't just glean, right? Like, I don't know what she thought before, maybe she knew that before, but like, wow, that is a lot of barley. Okay. By the way, what a beast of a woman to carry this all the way home. I mean, it's like a big sack of stuff. This is 35, 40 pounds, 50 pounds. A soldier supposedly could go on like a week or two with just an ephah of barley. I mean, this is like a massive amount of food. This is not what happens when you glean. Okay. This is what happens when you have an amazing harvest. The only thing I can think that's close to this picture is when Peter, you know, oh, I've already fished tonight. What if you say so? I'll drop my net. And his boat almost sinks because he gets so many fish in it. This is an overwhelming abundance of grain. It's extraordinary. Okay? She went out this morning hoping for a handout, and she has a full meal. I mean, she is good for the week. This is extraordinary grace. So, it makes it up. Lugs it back into town. And then this, I think, you're going to laugh at me. This is my favorite part of the whole book. Right, like, who cares? Don't we want to get married? We'll get there. It's beautiful. Naomi's at home. She's bitter. She come home because she's motivated by this expectation of grace. I heard the Lord visited His people. She's just clouded out in her bitterness. Ruth comes in, bangs the door open. Oh, wham! Okay, the particularly the Hebrew, but even in English here, the repeated words, it's just like, okay, there's this conversation. There's been two really high octane, emotionally charged conversations in this book. The first one is reported when Ruth says, I'm staying with you, and Orpah goes home. This one is just like full on, everybody's talking over everybody else. So she's sitting there doing the Bernie, the door bangs open, she drops it on the floor, and Naomi goes, this is not what I expected when you came in the door. She finally, something has got through. Daniel Bach says in his commentary, the sun dawned again in her life. Right? Grace encourages God's people, draws near to them, enables them. Grace enlivens the heart of God's people, brings new light back into her life. She comes in, she's like, wham, look at all this grain. And before you go do that, here's my Aunt Maggiano's meal. Chuck that in the microwave, right? And Naomi's just like, oh, well, I mean, okay. Fill yourself up on that. In fact, her Maggiano's meal is so big that she took it out. That's the it, by the way, the funny looking it in your NASBs, if you have it, that's in italics. She also took out, what did she take out? She took out the meal, but what she had left over after she was satisfied. That's the meal that she had, right? She pulls out the pita. She pulls out the roasted grain. Here, don't eat that yet. That's for later. Eat this. And she's satisfied from it. So now Naomi's munching, and as she's in the middle of this excitement, she's just like, what happened? Where did you glean today? You call this gleaning? Where did you glean today? May he who gave you favor, may he who was gracious to you be blessed. All of a sudden, there's a Godward orientation in Naomi's thinking again. This grace has woken her out of her bitterness, woken her out of her and her just obsession with herself, right? And she's just, she doesn't know, she knows it doesn't matter where. Who was gracious to you today? So now they're talking over her. Oh, well. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she'd worked and said, the name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz. Like everybody else's name. Like, I don't, she doesn't know. She doesn't care. He's amazing. She doesn't know who he is. The name of the guy I worked with is Boaz. Now, you know, because you read the first part of this chapter, and Naomi knows who she is, or who he is. But she's just like, who's this dude, this random dude who was really great to me, right? Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, maybe my favorite verse in the whole book. May he be blessed of the Lord. May he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead. You want to talk about reversible sweater, the inside out. This is the inside out from the end of chapter 1, right? She said at the end of chapter 1, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has witnessed against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? Grace, she sees God's, not only did he visit his people with bread, he's visited her just as she had hoped. The reason she struck back out on the trail to come home, grace has come home in the form of Boaz's gift, and the sun has dawned again in her life, and the scales come off, the bitterness unfolds, her face goes from Mara to Naomi again, and she says, may he be blessed of the Lord. I know who's behind this. I know that this is a righteous man who's done that. We'll talk about why that is. But then the blessing goes on. It doesn't stop with, may he be blessed of the Lord who has not. Who hasn't? I think here, Yahweh has not forgotten his kindness, his chesed, his loving kindness, his grace, the central aspect of God's character in the Old Testament that radiates favor and grace and kindness and equipping and acceptance and shalom to his people. He's not forgotten that to the living or to the dead. Now, it's possible that she means Boaz hasn't forgotten it, because she says, and we'll talk about this in detail next week, she says, he's near to us. In fact, he's one of our redeemers. And so it possibly comes on in her mind that Boaz isn't just doing this because he's a gracious, wonderful man, but because he sees this as an overextending kind of an extra level of the role he's ought to play in their family. We'll talk about that more in the next week. But either way, the only way he thinks that is because God has granted him to think that way. Okay, so I'm convinced that she's got her eyes centered on Boaz is doing this because the Lord hasn't forgotten his kindness to the living and to the dead. Well, she means living and the dead. Well, we're living, but to the whole family, to what's left. He hasn't left us to die. What has she been so concerned about all the way through? And rightly so. I don't have any children. I don't have any. This isn't going on. This is the end of this story. This is the end of Elimelech's family story. And all of a sudden, her hopes and her desires and her dreams about the role she's supposed to play in God's future for his people, where they're supposed to have, you know, descendants as uncountable as the sand on the sea. Her life has blossomed back from this act of grace, and she knows that it's God's grace. Even like, isn't that amazing? It's a parallel to Boaz says, may you find favor from the Lord? And she says, we found it. Again, Naomi said to her, this man is our relative. He's one of our closest relatives. We'll talk about what a redeemer is in detail next week. For now, suffice to say, it's somebody who in the family is to protect the welfare of the family, right? this man is near to us. He may even be the one who's supposed to protect the well forever. We'll see why that's a pretty big reach. So I don't know that Naomi's really scheming yet here. She's just like, well, of course you found grace from this one, because if he loves the Lord, this is the way his heart ought to run, right? She's explaining it. I don't know if she's scheming or not. I kind of don't think she is too much yet, but she might be. But I'll tell you one thing. Ruth has no idea. Because, again, all of a sudden it's been daughter-in-law, 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 mother-in-law, daughter-in-law. And then it says Ruth the Moabitess. Why does it remind us of Moabitess? She has no idea what Naomi's talking about here. I think she's pretty well-versed in her Bible, but the family intricacies of small-town Bethlehem, she's like, well, this man is near to us. He's one of our redeemers. She's like, yeah, that's nice. But also, you know, anyway, okay, whatever. That's great. But also, now listen to this. He said to me, you should stay close to my servants until they've finished all my harvest. Wow. That's been hinted at a little bit. But guys, this is like going out in the morning, wondering how you're going to eat lunch. Getting invited, you know, Truett Cathy invites you out. No, he's dead, sorry. But he invites you out to lunch, and he gives you a job. Yeah, the difference in security. You're looking for a meal. You're looking for today. And she has ongoing provision. I think you guys know the feeling of that. You know, like, as you're starting to get out in the job market and thinking about these major things, how am I going to support a family in the future? How am I going to do these things? It's the difference between, like, hey, somebody I took me out to lunch, I got a job today, right? There's security here. There's provision for the long run. There's protection from these fields she might end up in. He said, come through my whole harvest. Not just this harvest, the next harvest, and the next harvest, all the different sorts of things that I grow in my field. That is so far beyond what the law requires. This is the heart of the law, but this is so far beyond what the law requires. There is long-term stability here. Everything, in fact, that Naomi has been searching for and scheming for and crying over has been fulfilled in the most unlikely of ways. Her faithful, foreign, alien daughter-in-law has succeeded by God's grace, because she's trusted in God's grace at providing at least the medium-term stability that she's been longing for. It's overabundance of what she expected. Now he says, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maid so that others do not fall upon you in another field. I just think it keeps coming up, because that was I think Naomi's kind of in the back of her mind thinking that's not too far out of the realm of possibility when you go out that you come home very sorrowful, or at least haven't had a really rough day, haven't been picked on, whatever else. And instead she's come home with long-term security for them. And says she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. It's about another 6 to 8 weeks that we've kicked this story down the road, maybe even 10 weeks, assuming that we're in mid-spring here. We're going out to the summer. Through the end of, and remember, you don't harvest all year round. This is through the end of the major economic part of the year, right? You do all this. It's like one of the kids in youth, their dying ambition is like, I have got to, before I die, buy 100 nuggets at one time from Chick-fil-A, right? Like, which it's really difficult for me to understand. But it's like, what are you going to do? You can eat them all right now? Well, Naomi and Ruth aren't going to eat all 100 nuggets right now. They're storing them away, right? Which is why you don't buy nuggets, because they're nasty after like 20 minutes. They got this. This is set up at least for this year. They're long-term, at least for the foreseeable future. For the first time in this book, we can take a deep breath. We're off this roller coaster. That's why, and she lived with her mother-in-law. This is, in fact, the life that Ruth has signed up for. She has said, I'm going to be your support. I'm going to be your strength. I'm going to go with you. By Boaz's amazing generosity, that's the life that she set up for. She's in that place. Now, we're not satisfied. We already have some hints about the future. Naomi's not satisfied, and really, I don't think any of them ought to be satisfied, because they've met their immediate needs, but God's at work. Right? God has a plan. God needs a king. God is going to have a king through Boaz and through Ruth. He's got a plan, and his grace, this grace that has come here, has enabled, it's to his people, but it enables his people to live out his plans. There's so much more going on here than Ruth has in mind. Ruth can sit down at night and be satisfied and amazingly thankful to God because today her needs have been met graciously. Right? She's content. But God has a great plan that she does not even see. He is working out a plan for the ages, for our salvation here. She doesn't see that, but his grace isn't just in a vacuum. Now, guys, we have just a few seconds left, okay? Why is this my favorite chapter? Because in our age of cage stage Calvinists, right? You know what I mean? Like the Calvinist who discovers the doctrines of grace and then he takes his Bible and he beats John Wesley's face with it, okay? In our age of you have to have grace to be saved, right? It's none of you, all of God. And then, on the other hand, in our age of prosperity gospel is bad, right? We can lose sight of this sort of grace. Grace is for God's purposes, yes, but they have to live, they have to thrive, right? Doesn't always mean that. But this is the grace of God. This is the God that you serve today with your papers and your difficulties and your job and everything else. As you're running like Ruth does faithfully, according to his word, with your sights on his goals, this is the overwhelming abundance of grace that he looks at you with. Boaz embodies the nature of God the Father here. Right? This is the tenderness. He draws near to us with the same amazing overabundance, the satisfaction, the strength, the courage, the proper protection, everything that we need to run in our lane, and it isn't just a mathematical formula of that'll get them by. It's, here's the Maggiano's meal to take home, and more and more. God's grace enlivens our hearts. It brings us life because we are so dead, because we're so needy, but because he's so great and kind. It's not just any grace that will do. When you're dead, you need any help you can get, right? That's the one side of Calvinism that we get right. But it's not just any sort of grace that'll do. It is the grace that says God is amazing and he's tender and he's kind. Now, that's part one. The other reason I love this is because it is embodied grace. You and I experience the grace of God in two great ways, but they're both through people. Okay? Bear with me. You're going to be, oh boy. You and I demonstrate the nature of God's character to one another. As we draw each other in to our homes and to our lives, as we encourage and equip and enable one another to run in the lane, be lavish with that. Have your eyes fixed on me. You have the full resources, the reward of the God of Israel. I love that your heart is centered on him as your refuge. You've come to find refuge under him, so I'm going to help you in every way. I'm going to just, it just flows out of you. That is how you experience the grace of God. That's how he brings so often the courage that's needed for sanctification, the courage that's needed to face another day, the resources that you need to get by day. Be like Boaz. He said there's two ways. Yeah, there is two ways. God draws near to us in a person. Jesus doesn't stay in heaven. He draws near. I'm studying Hebrews just personally right now. Right? He knows your frame. He knows your weakness. He put on flesh. He is the Redeemer who comes near to his people. You can count and trust your entire life on his kindness. Not just he'll get you by in a mathematical formula. He knows your frame. He draws you into the throne of grace. He's with his people and will be to the end. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for grace. I thank you that you have sent your Son in these last days, that he is not ashamed to call us as brothers and sisters. Lord, may our hearts be enlivened and encouraged and emboldened by your great kindness to us. We pray it in Christ's name. Amen.